Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with Stacey Lynn, an outstanding investigative journalist who exposed corruption on the municipal, local, and federal level in an area in Colorado. And there was retaliation. We go into detail with that. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. There's an event coming up here in New York City. The producer and director of Why in the World Are They Spraying will be coming back to New York City for another screening of Why in the World Are They Spraying. And to give us some more details, we're joined by Cindy Pakulas with Long Island Skywatch. And she is, as you may remember, listeners, she is the producer and presenter of the material Connect the Dots. It's a premium that we offered last year. Going into the details of who's behind weather control technology, such as the companies and politicians and CEOs. I want to talk with you, Cindy, because you're organizing an event that's coming up with Michael Murphy, the director and producer of What in the World Are They Spraying and Why in the World Are They Spraying? That's the new one. Can you tell listeners a little bit about that?
Yes, it's going to take place on Saturday, January 19th at 6 p.m. Another member of Long Island Skywatch, Leslie, really should be given the credit because she actually has a relationship with the owner of the Van Dam Diner who really wants to get this information out to the public. So there is no cover charge to watch the film, but we just ask that everybody, you know, purchase a meal while they're sitting there watching the film to help support the diner.
Wonderful.
And these showings. And Michael Murphy will be there prior to the showing and also afterwards for a great question-answer session. So it's a great venue to introduce people to geoengineering and chemtrails or to even learn more information yourself.
Now, this is at the Van Dam Diner in New York City. That's in Manhattan, Lower Manhattan, in Soho, New York. It's located at 12 Van Dam Street, New York, New York. The number, if you want to contact them, is 212-647-1111. And again, that's Mike Murphy, the director and producer of What in the World Are They Spraying? He'll be presenting Why in the World Are They Spraying? That's the new one. Yes, we did have a screening last year at Theater 80. Thank you, listeners, for that wonderful turnout. But here is another more intimate gathering with Mike Murphy. That's Saturday, January 19th at 6 p.m. Mike Murphy did have a wonderful time staying here in New York City. There's a lot of support for the work that he's doing. Again, let's show him more of that support. Cindy, can you give us that date one more time? And do listeners have to email you?
Yeah, that would be great because it is limited seating. It's Saturday, January 19th at 6 p.m. And if anyone plans on attending, which I hope they do, if you could just email Long Island Skywatch at yahoo.com so that we could get a head count, that would be great.
Long Island Skywatch, all one word, at yahoo.com.
And also, all information is also posted on Long Island Skywatch.
Cindy Pakulas, thank you so much for the update, and thank you to Leslie with Long Island Skywatch for putting another presentation together with Michael Murphy. Again, building consensus on this issue is absolutely critical.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Here's a story. What we're seeing here is a partisan division being created regarding the issue of United Nations Agenda 21 in ICLEI. There's a story in Salon.com. Oklahoma GOPer introduces bill targeting Agenda 21. The right continues to tout conspiracy theories about the UN's Sustainable Development Initiative. So you're going to have credible or seemingly credible left publications such as the Salon, Huffington Post, criticize the right for putting the brakes on the UN Agenda 21 and make it an environmental issue, which is a perfect technique to confuse the issue. We're going to go into detail about some of the important aspects of UN Agenda 21 through the story of Stacey Lynn very shortly. But the way this article is framed in Salon.com shows you that they're calling UN Agenda 21 a supposed conspiracy. A Republican legislator is in Oklahoma is introducing a bill intended to target Agenda 21, a supposed conspiracy by the United Nations to usurp private property rights in America. Listeners, this is not a conspiracy, as you will hear. This is very, very real, and it's something to pay very close attention to. If nothing else, pay attention to where your tax dollars are going. As many listeners know, the United Nations agenda for the 21st century is a global plan that's creeping into regions of the United States and North America. This is all being done under the guise of environmentalism, but also, in my opinion, through weather warfare and disaster capitalism. The use of buzzwords are important for this agenda, as we've pointed out in the past. Smart, livable, walkable, vibrant, bikeable, consensus, progressive, community, diversity, carbon footprint, vision, green. The UN Agenda 21 would implement multi-layered restrictions such as limited access to electricity and transportation, and imposing unsustainable tax rates and arbitrarily seizing property for personal gain. Across the country, individuals are losing their rights to private property, land, and water, as cities are replanned for high density, urban development, and smart growth. We look at how ICLEI has systematically invaded the Fort Collins area of Colorado through the traumatic yet courageous story of investigative journalist Stacy Lynn. For 4 years, Stacy Lynn alerted her community about ICLEI. That's the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives. She revealed how large amounts of taxpayer money is being spent annually. And in her work, she saved about 300 local jobs, scores of private businesses, by bringing awareness to ICLEI policies that were to be mainly voted on in secret. Oh, and New York City has the same sustainability plan as Fort Collins. By exposing the money trail, plus being successful in saving jobs and private businesses, she was retaliated against. Those people who retaliated were then exposed for their Agenda 21 business connections. It gets worse. Stacy's son was taken from her in what has been described as a complete miscarriage of justice. The twists and turns in her story are dramatic. Stacy Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, we've done a few shows on UN Agenda 21, ICLEI, and the various implementations such as smart meters. But can you remind listeners what Agenda 21 is and how you exposed it manifesting in the Fort Collins area of Larimer County, Colorado?
Yes, Agenda 21 is a program of the United Nations. It is focusing on the environment. A lot of the things they do is attempting to make the world a more sustainable place. And a lot of times you hear the word sustainability, and of course everybody wants clean water and clean air. If you have children, of course, you're worried about the future. So it's all placed under the basic guise of saving the planet. Carbon dioxide is the main focus, of course, and the interesting thing about carbon dioxide is if you look at the United States Department of Carbon Dioxide Information Analysis Center, they will actually tell you how much carbon dioxide is in Earth's atmosphere. And so as an investigative journalist, I wanted to know exactly why we were so focused on CO2 and why we were so interested in reducing those levels. The department actually says that the total amount of CO2 in Earth's atmosphere is 0.0001%. So I started to wonder, why are we so interested in reducing that if it's such a small amount to begin with? And science also says that those levels are naturally decreasing. So what I came up with was I stumbled upon an organization called the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives, and I ran into that through the City of Fort Collins website. I became interested in all of this because the City of Fort Collins began a large attack on small businesses that had been in Fort Collins for almost 100 years combined. And the questions I was asking the city and the answers I was getting didn't make sense, so I just started to delve into the motivation behind it. So the city was trying to eliminate privately owned trash companies, and they said that the city wanted to have all the same color trash containers. That was a little bit strange to me. I thought there must be something more behind it than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I did discover that the city of Fort Collins has been a member of ICLEI for almost 20 years. No official knew about the organization. Nobody in the city knew that we were a member of this international organization. And the interesting thing is, the way that it's implemented is through a sustainability plan or a long-term planning process. And about 5 years ago, I realized that New York City also has the exact same sustainability plan as Fort Collins was implementing. So I have done a lot of research around the United States trying to figure out the common threads and what the ultimate goals are with Agenda 21 and Local Agenda 21, which is known as ICLEI. As I was investigating this, I started speaking publicly, I started writing, and I did focus on the local governments in the state of Colorado. I began getting phone calls from all around the United States asking if I could help them as well. So I have a lot of knowledge about Agenda 21 and ICLEI throughout the U.S. and figured out ways to successfully defeat these policies that were hurting small businesses.
When was this, when this awareness kicked in on for you?
Well, I started wondering about what the city was doing to local businesses in 2008. It didn't take me long to figure out what was actually behind the plans and who was forcing these policies on small businesses. So 2008 is when I began the investigation. 2009, the city of Fort Collins had a major fight on its hands because I didn't think it was proper for the city to put these longtime business owners out. We were successful in protecting these small businesses. They're still in business today, nearly 4 years later. And I took that, the process that I learned from the Fort Collins trash fight, and started helping people around the state protect their small trash companies as well. ICLEI goes after trash companies as one of their first policies to implement locally, because there's a lot of money involved, and because they can make people feel guilty for having trash.
Oh, yes, I think some of that is happening here as well in New York City, and we'll get to that. But and before we get into your personal story, if you could tell listeners some of the ways that you brought awareness to your community through writing articles, a newsletter, and some of the strategy maybe that could help other activists maybe here in New York City or other areas?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing I did was I began attending city council meetings. I had never been involved politically prior to the trash issue in Fort Collins, but I went to every single council meeting. I listened, I took notes, and I started asking questions. And the biggest thing people can do is ask questions about where the money is coming from, who stands to benefit from it, even sadly private companies who our ICLEI members can figure out how to get into the city and get special benefits and perks. So I started going to council meetings. I also started a small newspaper that I hand-delivered to the small business owners in Fort Collins. A lot of times small business owners don't have time to stay current on what the city government is doing, and a lot of times they vote and implement policies before the public even knows about it. So I became very vocal, wrote articles for the newspaper, the main newspaper in Fort Collins, and I was just relentless in helping people learn what these policies actually meant to them and how it would hurt them financially.
Now, you hand-delivered this paper. Why did you do that?
Well, it was a great way for me to get to know the business owners. I love small, locally owned business owners, and I support them as much as possible. So I got to meet a lot of really hardworking people who didn't know what was coming at them, and I wanted to give them a head start so that they could fight it before the votes were done.
I see. The important part here, what I see as strategically of what you're bringing awareness to, is the money trail. Was that a driver for bringing awareness?
Initially, it was not my main motivation, because I was more disturbed by what they were doing to the people, by how they were going to destroy nearly 300 local jobs And I saw those people's faces every time I did my research and stood up and spoke. Those people were not going to have jobs if we did not stop this takeover. So it was the people that made me passionate initially, and then I started looking at the money. I actually took the budget from the city of Fort Collins. It's 300 pages long, and I dissected it. And I needed to know how much money was being spent on Agenda 21 and ICLEI programs versus fire, police, and roads. And that's when I became disturbed even more than what was happening to the people, because I found out that we were spending nearly $1 million to teach people how to feel when they were outside. And I know that's difficult to believe, but it's in our budget.
What does that mean exactly?
So they wanted to spend all of this money on programs that would teach children and even senior citizens how they were supposed to feel when they were walking down a trail in the woods. And I know New York City has a similar part of their budget that does similar things. So if you go to your budget, you will see a similar program to teach people how to feel outside when they're outdoors.
But in Fort Collins, it's near $1 million for this?
It's $835,000. That was our budget 2 years ago.
Is that an annual?
It is. It is. One of the reasons that I was looking at the money aspect was because a lot of times these sustainability policies actually hurt minority populations and disadvantaged populations. So then I wanted to see what is the city actually doing to hurt these populations? And here's one example. And remember, New York City has the exact same sustainability plan that Fort Collins has, so this applies. We were spending $1 million, nearly $1 million, on a bicycle program where the city would buy bicycles. Now remember, that takes away from small bike shop owners. City buys bicycles, and then you can use a bicycle for free when you're in Fort Collins. But to use that bicycle, you have to have a credit card. So the people who would benefit the most from using a bicycle for free don't have access to it. You have to leave your credit card with the city so that's the guarantee that you'll bring the bike back. But I don't know very many people who are struggling financially who actually have credit cards that are valid. So they can't even access this city program that they're actually paying for.
There was a lot of criticism with that plan here when it was suggested or proposed. I know you mentioned some of the successes that you had in stopping ICLEI-driven regulations in your area, but can you go down some of the lists of the prominent successes that you've had in maybe bringing awareness to temporarily prevent or completely stop some of the implementations?
Yes, the most fabulous success we had in Fort Collins was that we did save those private businesses. We still have 300 jobs that would not exist if the city would have successfully ended their businesses. I took that process and helped other communities in Colorado save the very same small business owners. So in Jefferson County, we saved 13 small businesses. I mean, that is an unbelievable success. And then I was writing papers to help other communities around the United States understand the process for how you expose ICLEI and Agenda 21, how you help elected officials learn about it, because honestly, most elected officials do not have the knowledge about the policies that they're voting on. Some of the officials do know, but it's a very secret topic. You just don't hear a lot of discussion about ICLEI or Agenda 21 in local governments. So you help your officials learn about it. You show them the money that is required to implement these policies. The city of Fort Collins actually had to increase our sales tax rate just to cover ICLEI and Agenda 21 programs. And another good example of that, so that you can start looking at your budgets, is we were spending $835,000 to teach people about the difference between a CFL light bulb and a incandescent light bulb. But the thing that the city was leaving out in their education program was the mercury toxicity in the CFL light bulbs. They did not explain to people or educate them about how to handle a CFL if it broke, what to do with children and women who are pregnant, there was no education in the risks. And that led me back to my concern for the people and my passion for helping people understand what these programs were actually doing to their life and the planet as a whole.
Great job. $835,000 a year to educate people on the difference between those curly light bulbs with mercury inside of them, which is a hazmat situation when they break, I understand.
Yes. And if you take it a little bit deeper and you think, okay, let's learn about the mercury that's inside these CFL light bulbs, and you find out where the light bulbs are manufactured, well, why are they, most of them, manufactured in China? And the answer is, sadly, because they don't have the health standards, health and safety standards that we have in the United States, so it's cheaper to produce them there. So then I wanted to know, well, how are we affecting the planet in China, and how are we affecting the people in China? And the answer is tragic. 95% of the people in China who are manufacturing these CFL light bulbs have mercury toxicity poisoning, and once you have it, you don't get rid of it. That's tragic to me, and I think people care. Turns out they do care.
Oh, they do care. Yet it is, it's in the budget, and there's no mention of this within the education of what these light bulbs contain. And there's an $800,000 a year expense for Collins. And I wonder if it's here in New York City as well, in other big cities, if it's there.
If you have a plan, a long-range sustainability plan, such as Plan Fort Collins or Plan New York City, it's in your budget, it's in the plan, and the most interesting thing that people were going to care about, when you learn that you are a member of this organization, you, your city, your local government has actually given authority to city employees that supersedes the authority of the elected officials. Now you might be wondering, how is that possible and how do the elected officials deal with that? Here's how it works. In your sustainability plan, let's say the parking management office has the authority, because your city council has adopted the plan, the parking employees have the authority to implement green parking spaces without a vote. So they can come into your downtown, take out 10 parking spaces and restrict those only for green vehicles without a vote of your city council members. That's how they transform local governments into not being run by the elected officials, but being run by city employees who have no accountability and most of the time no transparency.
And specifically in Colorado, was this another victory for you?
It was. I noticed downtown Fort Collins that Patricia Stryker, she's the billionaire heiress to the Stryker Medical Corporation, she built a new building downtown. And after it was finished, she took, I believe it was 8 parking spaces in front of her building and dedicated them to green vehicles only. Downtown Fort Collins is already very congested with traffic. Parking is always an issue, of course, and to lose those spaces was financially damaging to the surrounding small businesses, and this is why. Each of those parking spaces downtown is worth approximately $300,000 per year. That's a lot of money that they would be losing, because still at this point most people cannot afford a green car. So they were restricting the access to these small businesses. So I went to the city council, talked to them about these parking spaces, and the city council didn't even have any knowledge of it. They didn't even know that 4 blocks from their city hall, they had lost 8 parking spaces for most of the people to use. So they were, of course, irritated that they weren't aware of it. They asked how that had happened, and I told them to look on page 35 of their sustainability plan. And it gave the authority to the parking employees to make those decisions without any knowledge of the city council. And I know that's difficult to believe, but our elected officials have been stripped of their power and their authority. Got the spaces removed. There was an outcry, a public outcry, and the spaces in front of Pat Stryker's building are now accessible to all people.
Let's get into the retaliation here. When you become effective in stopping some of these ICLEI and Agenda 21 implementations in your area, you get attention, and some of it isn't good. Can you talk about how you were retaliated against and when this happened?
Yes, the first major retaliation occurred in 2010. I had attempted to recall a city council member because she supported this foreign organization, and she also supported the publicly and very loudly supported the elimination of these small business owners. So I thought a recall definitely was warranted. She had violated her oath to the United States Constitution, and I know that doesn't mean a lot to people, but a lot of people really do care about that still. So I attempted a recall. It was not successful because it's very difficult to recall an elected official. However, that did accomplish a major goal, and we actually got ICLEI mentioned in the local newspaper for the first time ever in 20 years. So that got us great exposure to Agenda 21 and ICLEI. But the first retaliation that came my way was a very powerful environmental lawyer firm came after me because the city manager in Fort Collins, now these are his words, heard an anonymous rumor at an anonymous event by an anonymous person who said that I had taken money for the recall against ethical standards. So this attorney firm came after me. Of course, they spent almost $5,000 of taxpayer money investigating me, and they found no wrongdoing. Because I don't do things wrong, and I know the law, and I follow the law. And this is actually a good time for me to say this. I am not an attorney, and anything I say during this interview is not to be construed as legal advice. I do not give legal advice. However, everything I say is true and can be verified.
Great. Thanks for pointing that out. I want to just mention that there's usually that one city council member that is funded through ICLEI. And I know talking with some people in Suffolk County, they've identified that person in the Suffolk County legislature. To your knowledge, is that what's going on? Because I remember Rosa Corey, author of Behind the Green Mask, had mentioned that there's usually one person that gets elected and is funded through the UN.
Yes, that's the interesting thing. In Fort Collins, we don't have any direct ties to funding to the elected officials. But when you look at the city departments, we have probably 30 employees in about 30 employees in five city departments who are funded directly by ICLEI programs. That is a massive amount of money. And most of the policies that ICLEI is promoting cost the taxpayers millions upon millions of dollars for no real gain.
You identified that city council member, and there was retaliation. Now, it goes further. Can you then describe what happened after that?
Yes. So after the investigation by the law firm, no wrongdoing was found. I didn't stop, of course. I kept speaking publicly. I would have private businesses throughout the state invite me to speak to their private employees, and those were fabulous conversations. I was able to help a lot of people learn really what was going on underneath the surface and why we were spending so much money on these programs that didn't make sense. I moved my focus south of Larimer County, where Fort Collins is located, because the pressure was quite extreme. And I won't go into the physical things they were doing to me, but I moved south, even though I still lived in the area. And we had a major success in Jefferson County, and that was when we saved the 13 small business owners from being eliminated by their city council. After that success, I thought, you know, this is going to hurt. This one is probably going to affect me a lot worse than some investigation. I had also been testifying at the Capitol on a bill that was to protect small business owners exactly against Agenda 21 and ICLEI. The major opponent that I was testifying against there was Waste Management. Of course, I had already blocked them from taking over nearly 15 small trash companies. They were not pleased with my success. And it turns out that Waste Management is a major funder for ICLEI, so we have one connection there that is a direct indication of retaliation.
Our guest is investigative journalist Stacy Lynn, and we'll be right back after this break. just joining us, we're speaking with investigative journalist Stacy Lynn about her incredible story, exposing the corruption of those involved with ICLEI and Agenda 21 in her area.
So, after that major victory in Jefferson County, I do have a 9-year-old son. He is now 9 years and 9 months. His biological father had been largely absent from his life by the biological's own choice. Mm-hmm. He had been abusive anytime he was present, and that is all documented. So he appeared out of the blue. He had not even been in the state for quite some time.
How many years later?
He had been largely gone for probably 3 years. Not sure where he was. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, he had seen my son maybe once or twice a week for my son's entire life. So he was not actively involved as a parent. He did appear, demanded full custody. He had never had custody. He had never spent a night alone or any time alone with my son. This began my introduction into the judicial system. I had never even had a speeding ticket in my entire life. I am a law-abiding woman and had never been in trouble with the law at all. Had no idea what I was in for. But of course, I used my investigative journalism skills to delve into the judicial system as I was trying to protect my son and I from abuse.
Wait, can you back up? Abuse from what exactly?
From the biological father.
I was desperately
trying to protect us from being exposed to the physical risks and the psychological damage that was to come.
Okay. Now, this is part of the retaliation here. As we go further, I just want to keep listeners up to date in what category we're at, because this story, your story, is incredibly complex. What then happened with parental custody?
Well, I battled it out for a year. I was able to protect my son during the one-year legal battle. The law enforcement and judicial system took every opportunity they could to punish me for exposing the local officials' involvement in ICLEI and Agenda 21. And unfortunately, in Larimer County, all of the top elected officials are Republicans. So I had been exposing, not intentionally, of course, the Republican Party for nearly 4 years. They saw this as an opportunity to teach me some lessons, which is what the biological father told the court he was doing to me as well. So I was not able to get any charges pressed against the biological father, even though they had audio tapes and handwritten notes of real threats to my son and my life. Law enforcement turned the other way. The district attorney's office completely ignored the evidence, said there wasn't enough, even though we had the law books open, and said it fits this. I was not able to legally or lawfully protect my son and I. On November 15th of last year, I was given a judge. Her name is Julie Kuhn-Field. She is a special consultant to the International Monetary Fund, and you might be asking yourself, why is a judge hearing a divorce, or not a divorce, a custody case, who's a special consultant to the IMF? So she decided not to allow me to have any witnesses, to not be allowed to present evidence, and to not even make a sworn statement during this custody hearing.
I just want to remind listeners, this is all based on the biological father, who has been absent predominantly from his son's life, now wanting to be part of his life.
Not only wanting to be a part of his life, but demanding full custody.
Full custody, taking your child, essentially.
Yes.
Okay.
So the judge, of course, violated every legal statute and every lawful procedure there is written. She let the opposing attorney take 7 hours and 40 minutes of an 8-hour trial. I was able to speak for 20 minutes at the end of the day. And the judge took 5 weeks to make a ruling on that permanent orders hearing. And on it's been a year, it's still very difficult to discuss. On December 19, 2011, Judge Julie Kuhn-Field issued a permanent order. However, she failed to serve me the order. She gave the biological father the order as soon as it was served, and she decided to mail me the order the next day, which means I got it 3 days after it was issued. Her order was issued effective immediately. Of course, I didn't get it for 4 days, so when I went to pick my son up from school on December 20th, the front office staff was traumatized. I didn't know what was going on. Looked down and saw my son's biological father's name on the sign-in list and ran to find my son. My son was sitting in the hallway on a chair. He was curled up in a ball. He had his coat pulled over his head, and I learned later that he sat there for 4 hours and refused to go with the biological father. I had no idea what was going on at this point. My son saw me. He grabbed my hand, and he said, "Run, Mommy, run faster." We ran out of the building. We were able to get my son safe for the evening. And somebody was yelling at me something about an order. Of course, I had no knowledge of an order. I had not been served the order. The Larimer County Sheriff's Office illegally tapped my cell phone that night. And I was arrested the next day after I had gone into the Larimer County Justice Center on my own will to see if there actually was an order in my file. That order transferred custody to the biological father immediately, and I was stripped of all of my rights for no cause. I was never accused of any wrongdoing against my son. Actually, the biological father's own witnesses during the hearing testified that I was an excellent mother. I do not have any record whatsoever. My son and I have had a very healthy, diverse life. And he was stripped of his entire life overnight. I had no way to tell him what was happening. I was allowed to make a one-minute phone call to him while I was sitting in jail as he was being forced to be turned over to the biological father. That was 1 year ago.
Stacy, this is absolutely unbelievable, and I can't imagine the trauma it has caused to you and your son. There are some parallels to another guest that we had on. You found out that they were surveilling you, and they tapped your cell phone. How did you find that out?
I thought that I had been followed for quite some time, but that's just a part of my job. I mean, I've been followed basically for the last 5 years. Just people are trying to find out if somebody's helping me, if I'm doing this on my own. They're trying to intimidate me and threaten me. I actually had sheriff's officers surround me inside the Justice Center just to harass me and intimidate me. So I was accustomed to being followed, but I discovered that my cell phone was tapped because they actually knew where I was, and that was quite disturbing. And then 5 months after my son had been taken, I noticed a lot of police activity around me, including Colorado State University officers, Fort Collins police officers, Larimer County Sheriff's officers. I was constantly noticing three or four different officers, either uniformed or plainclothes, around me all the time. I was talking to some friends about it, and they said, "You know what, I think you're being followed. I think you might have a tracking device on your car." And I thought that was preposterous, of course, because I've done nothing to warrant any of that. Well, on May 4th, I believe it was May 4th, we actually climbed underneath my car and found a industrial-size global positioning surveillance unit underneath my car. I took it to the sheriff's office in a neighboring county because I had already begun a lawsuit against my county sheriff's office for my illegal cell tap and the rest. And that sheriff's office traced that tracking device to the Larimer County Sheriff's Office, and we discovered through the neighboring sheriff's office that there was no valid warrant for the placement of that device. And, of course, the Supreme Court ruled in January of last year that regardless of the reason for a tracking device, there must be a warrant before it is placed, and there must be a warrant for its removal. So I was being followed for 5 months, at least 5 months, without a valid warrant.
Unbelievable. To find that tracking device is a big deal, and I hope there's legal recourse in that area as well. The other thing that I wanted to point out is, Larimer County Court has a high number of child removals compared to other counties in Colorado. Is that true?
That is correct. And if I'm a guest on future shows, I will be able to give you more specific facts and data on why that is and how that is and where those children are going, because where the children go is a key component of why it's happening.
Okay, I would definitely want to follow up on that. Now, can you tell listeners about how your son's biological father, Patricia Stryker, and the judge have conflicts of interest in terms of their connections to ICLEI and Agenda 21?
Yes. So I had, after my son was taken, of course, it attracted a lot of attention. Thankfully, I had a large network of contacts across the United States because of my work for the previous 4 years on Agenda 21 and ICLEI. So when they heard my son was taken, of course, everybody started to say this is not possible, what's going on behind the scenes. So independent investigators started connecting dots. It turns out that Judge Julie Kuntzfield, remember, she's an IMF special consultant acting as a judge in a custody case. She and Patricia Stryker, remember, I had the spaces removed in front of her building, have known each other for almost 12 years. And it turns out the judge and Patricia Stryker had shared an office suite. They're still listed on the state website as being office mates. So that's a direct conflict of interest. The judge also serves on the board of a Crossroads Safe House, which is a battered woman shelter here, which Patricia Stryker gives a large amount of money to. So there's another conflict of interest. And the reason the Crossroads Safe House is relevant, because when I recalled the councilwoman, the Crossroads Safe House director came out in the paper against me, so that we have another conflict of interest. The connection between Pat Stryker, the judge, the biological's attorney, and the biological father is interesting as well. The biological father lists on his website businesses that he works for. And there seem to be ties between Agenda 21 policies and goals and these businesses. So it is very complicated, but we do have a lot of conflict of interest between the judge and interested parties that I have politically and publicly opposed. So I did, a year ago, ask for the judge to recuse herself. She apparently made a Freudian slip, and this is on record in the official transcript, saying that she did not feel she had any conflicts of interest. However, when I asked for her recusal, I did not state my purpose for recusal was conflict of interest. She was just violating the law and the legal statutes. So she apparently outed herself a year ago. She has refused to recuse herself. Chief Judge Stephen J. Schepansky in the Larimer County 8th Judicial District is refusing to rule on the recusal. He is also refusing to rule on the void judgment. The permanent orders judgment is void legally and lawfully because of the judge's egregious violations of due process, the statutes, and my son's well-being. So we are at a stalemate. My son has been gone for over 1 year. I have not seen his face since August 30th. And I rarely get to speak to him on the phone.
What's the next step here for you, Stacy, to get your son back?
Well, the beautiful thing is this, if there is such a thing in this trauma, we have law enforcement officers in four jurisdictions who are standing up, and they're taking risks to their own lives and to their own families and to their careers. But they have been, I have kept them posted over the past year about what's happening in Larimer County. So we have 12 officers in four jurisdictions who have said on record, the law is being broken here, her rights are being violated, this child is in trouble. So we have that. The tide is turning a little bit as far as the attitude. So we're waiting for a ruling on the void judgment and the recusal. I'm not able to appeal this case because a judgment that is void cannot be appealed because it's void from the beginning, so there's nothing to appeal. So we're waiting for the bravest law enforcement officer to step up and say enough. Now, here's something that's going to be difficult to believe, but again, I have record. The judge in my case, Julie Koonsfield, has told law enforcement officers to stand down and not pursue child abuse and domestic violence crimes. The judge is telling law enforcement how to act and behave. That is inconceivable to me, that law enforcement officers would acquiesce to a judge. And that's what's happening.
The judge didn't let you read evidence in a letter that you wanted to present, and some chaos broke out in the courtroom. Can you describe that a little bit?
Yes, I was actually on September 13th, I was reading the void judgment official court document into the record during a hearing on Jaden's case. The judge panicked because she knew that if she was going to allow me to read the entire void judgment on the record, she could be arrested immediately, because it lays out the crimes she has committed against my son specifically and against me as well. She was interrupting me constantly, told me to sit down. I was not able to speak in full sentences because she was starting to panic. And a gentleman, a town board member and a decorated military serviceman, stood up and said, this court is out of order. I demand order in the court. He was very polite about it. He is a senior citizen. The judge, after he demanded order in the court, crawled quickly out of the courtroom on her hands and knees. The judge's clerk then pushed a panic button as she was crawling around on the floor. And now, as you're picturing this, imagine that nobody in the observers had moved. We were standing still, shocked at what the judge was doing. Nobody had taken any moves whatsoever. A sheriff's deputy then placed his hands on the man, who stood up and asked for order, and threw him out the courtroom doors. He did not give him a warning. He did not speak to him. He just picked him up and threw him out. That gentleman came back in, and that's when we were all ordered to leave the building. We all left the building. I went directly to the neighboring sheriff's office to tell them what had happened and serve them the void judgment as well, to keep them informed. And during that time, the judge says that she held a secret hearing without me. I had no knowledge of this hearing, but they went ahead with the hearing and issued rulings that prevented me from seeing my son. And so she is also guilty of holding a secret hearing without my knowledge. The judge then lied about the sheriff's office and the Justice Center personnel. And as a result, the officer who threw the gentleman out the doors is no longer employed at the sheriff's office. So the case gets more disturbing as it goes. But the most important thing that people need to understand is that I will not stop. And because I am an investigative journalist, I have everything on record. And it is in multiple locations. Multiple people have access to it. And I will not stop until we are able to expose this system and to save not only my son, but all of the other children out there who are brutally ripped from their parents.
Some of the listeners may be really amazed by your courage and ability to present yourself in the court and have the knowledge and conviction to stand against this corruption. You had a very frightful experience recently with an accident before you were going to court. Can you tell listeners a little bit about that?
Yes, and I'm purposely not calling it an accident because at this point we're not sure exactly what the motivation was. But one day before my last scheduled hearing, the crash occurred on November 8th, 2012. I was driving home after I had finished a 5-mile run along the river, and I heard a loud explosion at the rear of my car. I remember my car spinning, flipping, sliding, and then rolling multiple times. I was hit by a driver going a high rate of speed. She ran through the red light. I had the green light. And as I was flipping and rolling in my car, I was thinking, I cannot hit my head again, or I will not be able to save my child or all those other children. So I braced with all of my life so that I did not hit my head again on the window. After the car stopped rolling, It was truly unbelievable. There were men instantly at my car ripping the front windshield off. I was hanging in my seatbelt, and the men told me not to move, and I said, "You hold on to me because I'm letting this seatbelt off. I am coming out of this car so that I can save my son," and I crawled out of that windshield. The next day, I went to the hearing that was scheduled because I have not missed a hearing. I have not violated a court order, and I was barely able to walk, and I attended that hearing so that people can understand my resolve. I will not stop. There are too many children in the United States who are being brutally abused by the system. The officials know that I have the answers to solving the problems, and they don't want me to talk about it. I will not stop talking.
This is a very important model for many, many others to take note of who are in similar situations, but yours is one that I've never heard of before going to this length. Stacy, thank you so much for being on the show and describing your story. It's extremely important, and hope to have you back on and follow up some of the things we mentioned earlier.
Well, I want to end with one thing. I'm grateful for the opportunity because it makes us safer. My son and I are safer every time we get to have exposure on the public airwaves. Thank you so much for that. And I want people to not give up if you're going through similar situations, and here's why. I'm going to start writing articles about how the system is hurting these children and these innocent parents, and I'm going to start publishing them. There is a solution. The officials know I have it. Please stay tuned and read the articles when they come out, because we can transform the system and save the children.
Stacy, thank you very much for being on In Other News.
Thank you so much.
There is a benefit fund for Stacy Lynn. You can write to the benefit fund. You can look it up online. You can just type in benefit of Stacy Lynn fund. But also, it's a P.O. Box, P.O. Box 1211, Arvada, Colorado. That's A-R-V-A-D-A, Colorado, 80001. Again, that's P.O. Box 1211, Arvada, Colorado, 80001. That's for the benefit of Stacy Lynn fund. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. See you next Monday, 10 p.m.